Family life is hectic, and everybody kind of gets through it as best they can, one day at a time. But there are other ways to think about how to face what's going on in your family, the communication, the collaboration, the connection, the organization, the overwhelm of it all, with a little bit more thought and planning. Today, I'm bringing in someone who I consider to be a family management expert who works with her clients, especially neurodiverse and ADHD clients, all the time to help them bring strengths forward and identify some tools and techniques and strategies that they can use to just help make some of what happens every day in family life a little less crazy. Welcome to Surfing the Quicksand. I'm your host, Kathy Vines. Families struggle with all sorts of things from the day they begin being a family. And that's even when we don't have other things in the mix like neurodiversity. Neurodiversity is where we have one person or more in the house that has some brain-based conditions like ADD or autism or bipolar or other issues that go on that impact how our brains function differently than others. That's divergence, neurodivergence. And how it impacts our daily lives as a family, our communication, our operations, everything becomes the headline every day. I wanted to bring in somebody who spends her whole career working with families on helping them better manage and be better organized and be more productive inside the home, really focusing on families with neurodiversity. I have today with me Ellen DeLapp. Now, Ellen is one of my frolleagues, you know, that's friends plus colleagues from NAPO, the National Association of Productivity and Organizing Professionals. And fun fact, she's actually a former president of NAPO. So she's had a lot of leadership in this industry. And her leadership in this industry goes back over 25 years. So she's been a professional organizer so long, her website is actually professional-organizer.com. Like, how early do you need to be to the industry to have nabbed that website? I am so happy to have Ellen here today to be in part of this conversation to learn better about how we can all, even the households that are not neurodiverse, work more closely on communication and tools to help family management in the house. Welcome, Ellen.
Thank you so much for inviting me, Kathy. I'm thrilled to have this conversation. And one of my mini mission always is to make a difference one family at a time. So I'm really glad to be here with you today.
Thank you. And I do think we've already had a few episodes where neurodiversity, especially ADHD, has been a theme and a topic. And I think some of that is because what I find with families, especially when I'm thinking about midlife women, there are a few different plot lines that I've heard come up in my work with people over the last 13 years, and I'm sure you can speak to this as well. One, we'll hear about, I'm neurotypical, right? We'll say that, you know, one spouse is neurotypical, but my spouse, it has ADHD, right? So I'm in a kind of a mixed marriage, right? Then I'll hear maybe my child has ADHD, probably because one of the parents do, but we haven't quite gotten that solidly diagnosed, but we definitely think one or more of our kids do. And then the third factor that comes up more and more is midlife women who, due to all that's going on in perimenopause and menopause, are revealing from a kind of biochemical point of view that they actually do have latent diagnosed ADHD, whether it's because the hormone shifts at this stage in their life have really driven to reveal these symptoms, or because of the work that they've been able to do and masking and just social acceptance throughout their whole life never allowed them to stop and reflect on, wait, what's going on with my brain? why doesn't this all feel normal for me? They're realizing, midlife women are realizing more and more that ADHD is kind of on board for them. So I want to bring more attention to that through Surfing the Quicksand, because I do think all three of those plot lines tend to show up a little bit more in families as I work with them. I know that you really do specialize in working with families with ADHD and other neurodiversity. Start by telling us more about who you are, what your business is about, and how you work with people.
Well, my business started right at the turn, like 25 years ago. And within the first 3 years, I felt a real calling to work with people with ADHD. ADHD wasn't well known for adult women, which is the primary group that I work with. And I would come to our work residential with them. There'd be certain circumstances, a lot to do with paperwork, laundry, routines. And came to learn that many of my clients, about 80% of them, are people that are either undiagnosed or diagnosed with ADHD or anxiety or coexisting conditions. And then from there, I just turned into that calling in terms of getting more education, joining different organizations like the Institute for Challenging Disorganization and CHADD, where I could get more education to work well with my clients. And then as time has gone on through COVID, I think there's just been an increase in the diagnosis of all sorts of ages of people and just learning more from each of them as well. My clients are very generous with what works with for them as well. So I've learned a lot from them. And then also around 2010, there was a certification called Family Manager Coach that I certification as well. It's not in existence anymore. But so throughout this time, I've just leaned into the education and the experience to help my clients do what they do best and help them with coaching through the things that are not their strong points.
I've been working with people for years, and I really, while I have done some work with families, I certainly don't put myself out there as a family facilitator or family. I love that term, family manager coach. I work with individuals, and sometimes what we do spills into like, all right, how should we talk about how this is impacting the rest of the household, or how the rest of the household is impacting you? When you are working with families, is somebody coming in and saying, "Hey, Ellen, I've heard you work with families. Can you come work with ours?" Or is it more, "All right, I'm working with the mom, and it turns out we actually need to expand our services."
Exactly. Usually I start with one family member. I do work some with students, so sometimes I work with the student, but primarily I'll start with the mom. And sometimes these are families that are the parents are divorced. So the mom needs a lot more support, and her relationships with her children are very important. Sometimes there can be some frustration, as you might imagine, between neurodiverse parents and children. Sometimes I'll come in there and work alongside them in that way. So, yeah, it meant primarily starts with the mom seeking solutions, is what I would say.
I think when I have people reach out to me, especially if they do have ADHD, diagnosed or undiagnosed, right? So I will always ask, it's one of the things I ask in an intake, no matter who I'm working with, in the organizing straight. Not, I don't talk about this when I'm working with career coaching, but on organizing, because ADHD can be so impactful in what's going on and what their pain points are, I will ask in my intake call, so do you know or believe that you might have ADHD, right? Because, and I'm so struck by how often people will say, I don't know for sure, but I think I might, right? Because what they're presenting to me is their pain points of why they want to work with somebody start to feel very much reminiscent to me about how I feel ADHD people often show up. When you think of the high level kind of outline of what the ADHD person calling for solutions looks like, what are the things that they're complaining about or fretting about that has them reaching out to you?
Because life is going at the pace it's going at. The lack of organization physically in their home has become incredibly burdensome to them. That's one of the first things people reach out for. Their workplace, trying to manage the work-life integration, has become very cumbersome. And then still, there's a lot of paperwork that is unmanageable for people. So it comes down to those three pieces on paperwork, physical stuff, and then how do I manage still like getting dinner on the table or getting help in my home. And so just creating like an easier life overall.
I think it's interesting you mentioned the point around sometimes it's a divorced household and a lot more is then weighing on maybe the one parent, the parent that's reaching out to you. And I do, I find what also comes up in that space is there's that extra layer of coordination that, yes, in many, might say most households, that the parents are still together. Most of that labor still falls to the mom in the first place, right? That's, I think that's a general, it's a generalization we can kind of buy into saying, yes, okay, we can see that. But even when it's a divorced household, a lot then goes to that same parent to have to coordinate across two different households and across that coordination of co-parenting. I feel like even for the people who are not neurodiverse, who are at the top of their game, who do have a great handle on time management, that is an extra layer of complication and communication that really people are not prepared for. What's your exposure to kind of this part of managing households when there's actually two households they're involved with?
Well, it is complicated because there's so much to go between the households. So, setting up stations that manage the structure of that in terms of the mudroom, the landing strip, whatever you want to call it. So, the physical aspect of it, the calendar coordination, people are much more adept at their digital calendars. The frustration that is the emotional regulation that goes when people are going between households. There's a lot to manage with the routines of getting a good night's rest for everybody so that we can be at our best for emotional regulation, things like that. So there's a lot of structure that families have put into place. It's not perfect, but it's manageable. And that significantly helps everyone managing that going back and forth, that time for kids.
You mentioned two critical words that I want to go deeper on, structure and routine. I have
Favorite
to,
words.
I right, exactly. I have to assume this is a big bulk, not only of the work you're doing with families, but just the conversations and the education you're having with them about the value of structure and routine. What is it that, how do you introduce these topics? How do you enforce these topics? And what do you do with these families to help them kind of embrace things that they might otherwise be rejecting for lots of family dynamic reasons?
So structure is definitely a pain point, and my clients are well aware of it being a very difficult part of managing daily life. So we really work at it at very tiny baby steps. So what are the things that are existing, and how can we add on to that one existing structure that's in place? Sometimes it's a physical structure, which my clients will often say that it's not rocket science. Why didn't I think of that myself? But of course, we need to put this at this point so things naturally are, the laundry's on the floor right there. Of course, maybe it could go in a basket if the basket was in that right spot, that kind of thing. So we try to create a tiny entry into it so people feel like it's manageable and practical, as well as we don't just ask one family member to be responsible for this. My big thing I tell people always is build a bigger team. And the first people on your team are the people that live in your house with you. So we all need to buy into this structure. So we do a lot of family communication that way, where what's going to make it easier? There's no one right way to do this. Organizing doesn't only look like one thing. So the buy-in, the building a bigger team helps with creating that structure too.
Buy-in is so important. And even when it's honestly, even when it's just one person, getting one person's buy-in when we're talking about new ideas and piloting new ideas can be tricky. I'm thinking about kind of neurodiverse households where you might have one person in the house who's just kind of resistant to whether it's resistant to change or resistance to doing more than they already do. How are some of the communication tools involved in helping to get this buy-in and agreement to build this bigger team going on?
A lot of it is using a coaching model as opposed to an authoritarian model, because our kids really crave the agency that they need, that they need to be heard and respected. And so by having that communication style as a parent, which I'm often in very frustrated homes where people are not necessarily feeling like they're communicating well. So I do encourage parents to go through some coaching training if they can, so that they can be better communicators with their kids. I also encourage people to, because sometimes I'm a facilitator in those conversations. And so it's really powerful to have a non-family member in the mix too, because people are going to be a little bit more open to listening, that they let down their own, this is the way to do it, and it's only one way. They're more open to hearing, oh, there's several ways we can accomplish the same thing. But one thing I've learned about my clients that I point to them is something about their learning modalities, which takes everything away from everyone's personality. Are you a visual learner? Are you the kind of person that out of sight is out of mind? And more likely than not, about 80% of the people are highly visual. So when you start having this conversation in families where it's not about a personality, it's about a learning style, people start opening up thinking, oh, this is so true about me that I would be open to that way of setting things up because I am visual. And so it kind of takes it to a different level.
I like talking to people about learning, you know, there are different learning modalities. So, right, so there's visual and there's experiential and there's auditory and there's tactile and there's probably some other I'm forgetting. But visual, I always talk to people as a, it's such an easy example because I'll have two spouses and I'll say, all right, one of you feels really triggered by the amount of clutter on the surface, on the counter, on the kitchen counter. The other one is maybe in a situation of if I don't see it, I'll forget it exists. Or if I don't see it, I'll forget I have to do it. Right. And so even talking about people like, let's try and use a little bit of a decoder ring so that you understand how each other is interpreting and what they need from their environment. That concept of saying, well, are you a visual person? Are you an auditory person? Like that brings in such new language, not only for them to understand themselves, but to be able to have new communication with somebody else saying, oh, hey, husband, what I've learned about you is if you don't see it, you forget it exists. Where should I put this so tomorrow morning before work, you remember to grab it?
Exactly. And again, you're building this team. That's the whole goal behind the family manager concept and working with neurodiverse and neurotypical families is we're all in this together. How can I boost what's going on in your life? And how can you reinforce what's going on in my life? So I love that you are bringing that conversation out that is really not that complicated, but just needs an easy solution for that family.
I also like that you mentioned that sometimes you're suggesting things and they're like, that was not rocket science, right? Why didn't I think of doing this? So much of what we do sometimes is we are able to scan and evaluate somebody's systems, spaces, stuff, and say, hey, I noticed this. Tell me about that. And they're like, I don't know. I guess we moved in and we put it there. It's just always been like that. People stop seeing things. They stop thinking about why their systems are built a certain way. They have clutter blindness. All of that comes in. So when you bring in somebody from the outside, and you don't have to hire a professional organizer, right? Like, yes, we're amazing, but like sometimes just a trusted friend, you can say, can you please? I've been struggling with laundry. You seem to have that down. Can you come in and like just ask me questions about how our whole laundry process goes and come up with maybe some of your observations, what you're seeing? One of my favorite moments that I can think of this is I was working with a family, and I was actually working with the daughter, and she was probably 7 or 8 at the time. And when I work with parents, I have different age kind of cutoffs where like a parent, typically mom, is in the room as an observer, doesn't participate, but as an observer, I want her to kind of see how we're going and what the kiddos are saying. And the complaint was around, there's dirty clothes on the floor, right? Dirty clothes don't make a hamper thing. And I'm noticing that this, 7 or 8 year old has a hamper that has kind of like a nursery vibe to it. And it turns out it's the same hamper that's been in her room since she was a baby. And like her clothes are bigger now. And I just kind of brought that up. I said, so that hamper feels like maybe it's not the right size for what's today. And they're like, oh my gosh. Of course, it's not the right. Like, I never would have thought that maybe part of the problem, part of the system, part of the backup, part of the frustration is we have the wrong tool. We have the wrong tool in the system, and that's causing the system to fall apart.
Exactly. So very much so, just having an independent person that is, again, a part of your bigger team makes all the difference. And it's a trusted resource, non-judgmental, that comes into the space that can give you the kind of feedback you need in a loving way. And so, absolutely, you're right. It really is a system and a routine. And the systems can be updated and elevated, as well as the routines. And routines have to change over time because the velocity of life right now means our routines have to be very simple and easy for us to do. So those are all parts of every home in terms of not only setting up the system, but just evaluating, like from time to time. And that's one thing that has not lost vitality is the family meeting. Now, those are one of the things that I talk about a lot with families, and they coordinate with the family calendar. So, if the best case, everyone's updating their Google calendar or whatever digital calendar they've chosen. But what really brings meaning to it is when you meet once a week for this family meeting. Some people call it the huddle, whatever you want to call it. Most likely, the biggest draw is the food you're going to serve at the family meeting. Whether you're going to have some kind of dessert, whether you're going to have an outright sit-down meal, whatever it makes it easy, but just makes it easier by having these ways of gathering people together. So.
Well, I like that the food that you serve, that's just like the same rule we used to use in corporate meetings and HR. Like, all right, well, if you want them to come to lunch and learn, you better bring the lunch or else they're not going to
There you go.
learn. So when you talk with a family about, hey, I want to talk about the family calendar and the family meeting. So first I want to talk about the family meeting. Lots of families probably hear a couple of things, right? One is like, oh, my family will never go for that, right? They're never going to do that. Or, yeah, maybe we'll do it once or twice, but it's going to lose its potency. Or, gosh, we think it's going well. So, maybe we don't need it so much anymore. Maybe we got this. What are some of the things that you talk about with families about how to build a family meeting practice that is valuable and sustainable?
One of the first things I find about the family meeting is that we have to meet on a fairly routine basis, as you might imagine. So making it easier for us to meet at the same time and regularly. So what makes it valuable to people is the coordination, the collaboration, and the communication that goes on. And no matter what stage your child is at, they want time with you. And so having that time with you makes all the difference. The biggest problem is the partner buy-in, usually. Like gathering people together and saying it's a meeting can be really off-putting to people. So we have to make it valuable from the outset by saying, this is our special time together. Here's what we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about what's for dinner. We're going to talk about what's the next holiday look at. So just as we're building this enthusiasm for for family meeting, finding the routine of when to have it is really valuable and helpful.
One of the things you just kind of started talking about was, kind of the agenda items of it. And I do feel like part of bringing the idea of a family meeting to life is like, what's the goal? What are we trying to achieve by having a family huddle? What do you typically advise people saying these are the things you should be working on in that session?
So in a family meeting, I always start with what's going on with everyone? What's the calendar events going on? So we're really looking towards, again, communication and collaboration. So how can I help you get out the door, get to work on time, make sure you have all your school preparations done? So that like logistical part of the meeting is really important. But then you want to dig a little deeper in like, what are we going to do as a family to reinforce the values we have? What is the fun parts of what we do together? So those steps are just the secondary step of what's our first way of gathering people together with communication.
So it doesn't sound like it doesn't sound like it's also like a big feedback session. Like, hey, we need to talk about this problem that's been going on, and it's a big deal. Like, it doesn't feel like that. It feels more kind of logistics and how are we looking at the next week ahead? What's on the horizon that we need to be planning for now? I think about it in that way of just, they're like, okay, oh, looks like next Saturday there's a birthday party at the jump zone. Okay, so do we know what time? Do we know who's driving? Do we have a gift? Is there a waiver we need to sign? Right. That like, how are we tactically handling the challenges in our short and our near term and mid term horizon?
Exactly. So, but that also leads to people feeling like they want to have conversations that go a little bit deeper for everyone in the family. Like, why are we still attending to this afternoon activity? Is it time for us to give up on that and move on to the next? Is it more important for us to have time to do our homework than any other thing? And then in the big picture for families, it's like, where are we going on family vacation together and how will we spend that time? There's several authors that have talked about the value of being on a family vacation and taking time away from the everyday life and how important that is for families for bonding. So it's amazing that simple coming together, it is about logistics, but it's also about celebrating wins. Like, what are some of the things that went well this week with you, and how can we do more of that?
Oh, I love that. I love that reminder that it isn't just about the future and it isn't just about fixing. It's also about celebrating and reinforcing kind of that family culture and the family values and reinforcing the behavior that we know lead to all of us feeling better about how the house is being run and how it's going.
And just the way to get started again is just think about all of us are thinking about what's not working. What are some baby steps that we can take to move forward with the ways that we might have been held back? And just some little ways that are not necessarily expensive or time consuming, just in our environments that we're looking around at, like even like jotting notes down so that we don't have so much cognitive load. Just these little baby steps. A lot of times, there's a couple of tools that I love, just that are the Notes app. Like the simplest of apps can make the biggest difference. So take some notes. What do you want to be on your agenda for your family meeting? Take some notes. What are the lists that we need to make coming up? So some tools are, I think, where we gravitate a lot of times because we're thinking, oh, there must be an easier way to do this.
I love my notes app. Like I I can't even imagine what I would do without my notes app. And I get it that I'm pretty sure that's an Apple iPhone world. I was recently working on a project with people who were not all Apple people, and so we used Google Keep, right? Which are it was a little bit of a not quite a learning curve, but it's like, oh, it's not my native language, but it was good to do. And so it's a nice way to communicate with people across different platforms, or if you're a total like Google Android kind of family. But one of the things that worked out for me in terms of Notes app is I created a shortcut on my iPhone for when I'm driving. If something comes to my mind, I can trigger a shortcut that's going to add something to my Notes app. And so
Right.
I love that it, in a moment I can say, I use my code word, which triggers my shortcut, and the shortcut opens up a note that I call brain dump, and then it adds the language, and then that the second part of the shortcut is it texts me that note. So it reminds me when I get home, like, oh, I added something to my to-do list, and now I can go through that. I want to talk a little bit about technology, right? So we talked about the calendar and a family calendar. How do you talk about this with a family who is starting from scratch and they say, yeah, I have a calendar. It's on the fridge. It's paper.
Yeah, so I'm not averse to the paper version, that thing on the count on the fridge. Everybody sees it. Everyone goes to the refrigerator. So some people actually need to print out their Google Calendar and post it on the refrigerator so we can have better communication. Most everyone's using some digital calendar now in a hybrid fashion, even if they're not using it fully as their calendar. So even as simple as just adding an event your calendar that is a something of a routine, something as simple as which night is trash night, and inviting your family member to participate in the family trash night so you're not the only one taking it out, and setting the reminders. This is all something you can do at your family meeting too, for everyone to be simultaneously entering information. So it's a good thing. Some people with I firmly believe that the calendar is the easiest way for you to have a recurring event, but I'm not averse to you choosing an app you love to do that. One of the other things that coordinates with your apps is the Skylight calendar.
Yes.
I've been seeing it in everyone's home. It is an expense, but it again takes the next step where you don't have to look at something in your phone or your device, and brings it into the visual of everyday life on your countertop, wherever that is.
So a Skylight
So
calendar, if you, people don't know, is it's like a its own monitor, right? Its own picture frame, tablet kind of thing. They come in different sizes and it directly connects to your calendaring app and some other aspects of home management so that it is always there in display. So if you are someone that your family is tapped into, that we want to use a digital calendar, it takes away that step of like, oh, I have to go into my phone and look and see what's going on. It's like the calendar that's on my fridge. It can be nearby and it's still like hanging out in my kitchen because that's where the people are. So it's a way to bring the digital calendar a little bit to life in a dynamic and interactive way that gets updated all the time. And you're right, it is an expense, right? So I never want to. I never want to encourage people go spend money on a tool that's going to save your life or could solve your problems because that, that's how a lot of companies make money is by trying to sell you solutions on solving problems. But I have never met a Skylight family that's regretted it.
true. And I see them in all ages of stages and stages of homes, from people who have young children, college age kids. So it's great coordination. It's coordinating with everybody in your house, no matter how many people there are. It makes a difference for that many people.
I've actually seen there's some other products in the space as well, similar that are people are using to communicate with aging parents that live somewhere else, right? So if I want to make sure that my parents know when their doctor's appointment is or when, what time is bingo, right? I can do that with them too. So I think this kind of move towards Kind of very easy to interact with digital displays for to enhance communication, I think is only going to become a bigger tool in not only inside one home, but across homes.
Absolutely. Yes, I have some older clients that we've even gone to the display that is the time of day, the day of the week, the weather, things like that. And I mainly see them in older people's homes, but many homes could benefit from that, no matter
Absolutely.
the age of the people. So,
One of the things that I was reminded of, I want to go back to about the calendar and things is when I think of, again, I'm going to use a generalization here, but a lot of the clients that I have worked with ADHD, they can be prone to a combination of people pleasing and overcommitting, right? They are asked, hey, could you do this? Could you be, can you bake for the PTO sale? Can you do this? Can you do this? And there's a lot of yes. And there's not a lot of number one, looking at the calendar, make sure is that even feasible? Or number two, even putting that new commitment on the calendar. When you work with ADHD folks who have this particular flavor of people pleasing and overcommitting, what are some practices you advise to them to help them kind of bring insight to that and maybe correct for it?
one of the things I find with my clients is we have many things we love, and things tend to be equally important, which is not the case. So we have to do some prioritizing. So as we're looking at our vast list of lists, as all of my clients have many lists and feel frustrated by they're only able to accomplish so much in a day, I bring back the reality sometimes of maybe we're being overly optimistic about how much we can get done. And let's just list out each project separately rather than making this master list only. Let's take it from the master list to the context list. Like each of the different projects, what are we involved in? And of course, they're very surprised that they have 10 projects going on. The projects might be as small as I'm making Thanksgiving dinner to I'm doing my taxes. Like they're all very much. Each of them needs their own managing of the project. And by the exponential amount of involvement they have, they don't even realize that they've put themselves in a compromised time situation, I
Yeah.
would say. So,
And
yes, bringing this list thing back is so important.
I think about, right, we're talking kind of surface level here around, oh, I've overcommitted. Oh, I've promised too much. Oh, I've got too many things going on and I've lost sight of them. But then, where I find the pain is in that next level down, which is I'm overwhelmed, I'm exhausted, I don't know where to start. This is negatively impacting my relationships with other people. This is negatively impacting my reputation with people in the community because I have to last minute say, sorry, that didn't work out. I'm putting off giving bad news as long as possible because I'm desperately hoping a miracle is going to save me and I won't have to disappoint other people, right? It's not just about, oh, I said I would do three things at once. It's all this other emotional and identity crisis that comes underneath it, which drives such pain in our clients.
You're speaking so many truths there, Kathy, because so much of this is the fear of letting people down drives the fear of overcommitment. It's a vicious cycle. And when people come to this very abrupt realization, it's almost like that it crushes them. It really does. And so one of the things I really start with every client, with every family with neurodiversity, is what are your self-care routines before we can even get to how you're going to help other people? How are we going to help you? Like, what is your bedtime? When do you eat? Do you have a water bottle you take with you? When do you exercise? And so answering those questions is nearly impossible for many of my clients. And so, yes. So, finding a way to pull back from all the obligations is really difficult for people. They want to be involved in all of those things, and they know they're all very important. And especially when as you know, you're managing the generation above you and the generation below you. You're very much pressed for time. So yeah, that prioritization is very difficult for people, and it takes a tremendous amount of insight, self-awareness, and pulling back in a painful way that's going to make a difference.
Pulling back in a painful way that's going to make a difference is, it's one of those, you have to take one step backwards to leap forwards kind of statement, right? And there's a lot around what we've talked about in Surfing the Quicksand episodes, which talk about discomfort and understanding that living in discomfort is part of the growth that's necessary to achieve what we want. And I feel like what you just described is consistent with that.
Absolutely. Yeah, there are many painful moments that really deeply in our core feel uncomfortable that we're going to have to face, that in the long run will make us live the life we want, but we have to make those really difficult choices about them.
And difficult choices is part of this, right? And the you get calls, I get calls, people saying, I'm overwhelmed, I don't know where to start, I can't live like this anymore, can you help? And we you know I think about when I think about just kind of a standard organizing client calling, and I'll say, you know, what do you think you'd be willing to let go of to achieve that, right? I start from the very first conversation around, what's a difficult decision you'd be willing to make to achieve what it is you say you want? So I'm always framing this from the very beginning of working with a client that we might go through some things that feel uncomfortable to get you to where you say you want to be. Because what we know is if you keep going the way you're going, you won't change.
Right. The other thing is, it's truly unsustainable the way you're going. And that is why you had this conversation with one of us. And are you ready? And so it's so smart that you have that initial conversation preparing your clients for this is not going to be all that you think it is unless you're willing to make the sacrifice to get there. Very smart framing for them.
Ellen, this is really, I've loved this conversation, and I do think that people are, we've talked about kind of family issues, but it all kind of starts with individual issues, and the people who are probably most often leading the household are the ones li listening to this. So I hope that we've been able to get people thinking a little differently about what's really going on in their house and what are some things that small tweaks that they can be doing to manage through the family issues a little differently. I want to switch to the quicksand three, which are the three questions that I ask all of my guests that are kind of core to the philosophy of the podcast. So the first is, what is a trick or technique that you use personally to face something that you've been avoiding?
All about building the bigger team myself. So I search out resources that are going to align with the way I like to work and just incorporate them in any number of ways. It might be something, technology is a baffling to all of us at times. So it could be something as big as someone coming into my house and fixing that to somebody that I'm working with personally that can give me information. I'll often seek out a podcast, believe it or not. I love listening to the Quicksand podcast. I've really learned a lot from you all. And so just building a bigger team looks like a lot of different things. It doesn't always look like a person. It sometimes looks like just resource in general.
I love
So.
that. And thank you for listening to the podcast. Second question, if time and history or skills or money were not an object, what would be a career or job you might have liked to try?
You're going to be never hear this one. I would love to be a philanthropist. So I am a prolific volunteer, which is where I give back now. And if I were having the means, I would love to be a person that uses resources to promote different efforts that could make a difference in the world we live in.
I love that. I do know you are an amazing volunteer and driver of change in your community. And that's something that's been a part of your identity for decades. And I'm very proud of you for all of you you've done for your community. And my last question is, when life gets chaotic, what is something you do to recharge or hit the reset button?
So I, just like all my clients, I tell them you need to go to bed early. I'm a big napper. And so I sometimes will come home and take a nap. I definitely have an adult bedtime. And I think rest is one of the most important parts of what we're all about, because we need that for our energy and just to think clearly. So get a good bedtime.
I love it. That's something I'm always working on, I think, but that's okay. Ellen, thank you so much for your time and your generosity and your expertise here. I want to make sure people know how to get in touch with you or learn more about not only how they might work with you or but the resources that you have to share with your community.
So I have a website, professional-organizer.com. I'm also on Instagram as Ellen DeLapp, CPO, Certified Professional Organizer. And then I have a newsletter. If you go to my website, it's easy to sign up for that. I put that out about once a month. And then there's also a blog on my website, so you can read lots of information about all sorts of resources from, I've been blogging for a very long time, so lots of information.
You have been blogging for a very long time, probably more than most people have been blogging in this industry. So you do have a prolific amount of information and years of not only bringing new information to light, but learning and evolving your own expertise. I know that you go to conferences all the time. You are staying abreast in your industry with your expertise. And I love that you continue to bring new learnings to people through your Instagram and through your blog all the time. You are a source for me all the time to find out what's the latest in this field. And I'm so grateful to have you in my network.
No, you are such an important. We could go on it. We could have a podcast just about talking about each other.
I love that. Good. Ellen, thank you so much for your time today. And I'm excited that lots of people got to learn more about you and about family management today.
Thank you. Very grateful for our time together.
Well, if you can't tell, this was the first time I've recorded a podcast where I'm clearly under the weather. And I thank you all for hanging in with me as I kind of struggled through that. Who knew that this was going to be a kind of thing I had to pay attention to more when I started on this journey? But nonetheless, thank you to Ellen DeLapp, a certified professional organizer, family management coach, and dear, dear friend, to come and bring all that expertise that she deals with every day with her clients, leading ADHD households and helping them just really put some of that overwhelm at bay, find ways to focus on their own self-care that they so that they can better serve all the things that go on every day in their home. I hope that some of the ideas around family meeting and family calendars and understanding some of that undercurrent that goes on so often for those who are neurodiverse really can bring some new perspective to light, whether or not you are someone who is neurodiverse or you have that in your household, or even if you don't, just understanding things like different learning modalities and what, how, if I'm a visual person and you're not, that's going to cause some kind of hecticness and conflict inside the house about how we set up our systems. All of this leads to better awareness and communication when we take a step back and like look behind the veil a little bit to understand what's really going on underneath, make it less about the personal and more about our brains can go a long way to making every single day a little bit more smooth. Thanks so much for being here. Thanks for your patience with my voice, and we'll see you again soon.